How about this one? Oil can Boyd.
Yeah, oil can Boyd. That's real. Oil can.
Do you know what the...
No.
What an oil can is?
Well, I know what an oil can is.
No, you don't. No, in this case, you don't.
No, probably not from this. So
I have a guess.
Go ahead.
Is it beer?
Yes. I guess in Mississippi, where he was from, Dennis Boyd, he loved his beer, and they called him oil cans.
So they called beer oil cans?
Oil cans, and he loved his beer, yeah.
Oh, wow. So he's a raging alcoholic. See, that's some of the good names. What would your 1800s nickname be?
That's a good one. Let's have some fun with this one. Listeners, here you go. You've been tasked with a job here. You need to come up with me and Mark's old-time late 1800s, early 1900s baseball nickname.
All right, so let me just give yourself some facts, because you know how they do this. They did this off of like where you're from and everything else, right? So I was born and raised in Alaska. I am of German descent.
Okay.
All
right.
You know, I don't know what else you would.
I was born in a quiet town in New Hampshire. And I'm of mostly English, Welsh, Scottish, you know, the whole UK descent.
Right.
So there you go.
Mike Missing Teeth Evans.
Oh, man, you got me thinking about Oil Can Boyd. Oil Can Boyd, he was a throwback. He pitched the game in Cleveland where he struggled once.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, that's what happens when you build a ballpark by the ocean. Did not realize it was a lake.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Can I ask you one more nickname-related question?
You want to do one more? Yeah.
Well, okay. Which one's better? Because I was looking up some. The Big Hurt or the Big Unit?
Ooh. I like Big Hurt.
Do you?
Well, you put along with Frank Thomas, and the guy was the Big Hurt.
Yeah.
Randy Johnson.
Yeah, Randy Johnson killed a bird.
Yeah, I know, but Big Unit.
Yeah, well, it has a different reference.
I know it has a different reference. Although I don't remember the announcers talking about it that much when they would bring up the Big Unit.
No. When he walked into the shower, they said, there's a new sheriff in town.
All right. Jeez, I thought you peaked with Mount Vesuvius, but no, we keep going.
I'm just saying.
Oh, my goodness. Just checking out some of the things going on at denversports.com. By the way, big headline, reminding you about our big opening day party going on tomorrow at El Patio at the rooftop right across the street from the ballpark. We'll kick things off with Dover and Stoke.
Oh, you and I are we're not invited?
Well, we've done a lot of baseball opening day morning remotes, and they don't really kick off until about 9-10 o'clock.
Yeah.
By the time we're winding down.
When you do a morning of opening day, you just get degenerates. You know, people that show up at 7 to start drinking,
right.
They're not even going to make the game.
Right.
You're going to pass out.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love opening day, and I love what an event, really. It's become a tradition in downtown, in Lodo, for opening day on a Friday. Usually the weather's been good. But, man, it is a drunk fest. Be prepared. If you're going to go down there, it's going to be a party, man. It's going to be a party. So if you're a bit of the weak of heart for that kind of stuff, understand, it's going to be raging downtown. It's fun, but understand that's what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
You might see some things that, what do you think? Mark grosses you out.
I don't gross anybody out.
Yeah, you do.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
I don't.
Yeah, you do. Hey, Will Peterson wrote about this at denversports.com, and it's something that I'm finding kind of curious as well. You know, Justin Simmons hasn't signed with anybody yet?
Yeah.
It's been a month since he's been cut.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't signed with anybody.
I know.
So is this yet another classic example of us overrating Denver Bronco players? That once they get out there in the actual real world, people look at them and go, yeah, not that great.
I don't think in this case. I think in this case, it's how the market is turned on the safety position. and I've talked to you about this before, the Fangio effect. And this is straight from Kyle Shanahan. He said everybody started playing that Fangio defense. And since then, you know, that shell defense make you throw it underneath and make you put together 8-12 plays to get a scoring drive put together. And then when you get in the red zone, you can tighten up and, you know, those guys' heels are at about 8 yards because you don't have to get worried about being beat over the top. And the next thing you know, you're making people kick field goals. And so all of a sudden, that middle of the field eraser became, it's devalued. Nobody's playing it or not playing it consistently anymore. So where the market was a couple of years ago when Justin signed a big deal, it's $15.5 million, $20 million, whatever it was for the safeties a year. All those guys got cut. All of them got cut because that's not the market anymore. So a guy that's been to multiple, you know, multiple all-pro in Kevin Byard, Kevin Byard signed a 2-year deal in Chicago for $7 million a year. Like, the market has changed. So for Justin, I'm sure he's had opportunities, Mike, but he's like, wait a minute, let me just watch what happens in the draft, see where guys go, see what the best opportunity is for me to sign a deal, because I'm going to sign for limited money anyhow, because that's the market, and to sign a deal where I can go and have a chance to win a championship. So this is not Justin not having any interest. This is Justin biding his time and, you know, and waiting for the best opportunity.
Will points out that Adam Schefter, our buddy, was on a Philadelphia radio station and speculated that Simmons may have to settle for a 1-year deal.
Yeah, I don't doubt that either.
Well, then it was smart of the Broncos to cut Justin Simmons because what he was making.
What about the Broncos bringing Justin Simmons back?
Sure. Why not?
Get him on a 1 or 2 year deal at $7 million bucks a year.
It would build some goodwill with Broncos country, I would think. It would build some goodwill in that room.
And I think the other thing that would happen is you would realize, hey man, this is like, I think Justin is fine and he understands, you know, the business aspect of this. The guy's a mature dude. He's a great dude. So I think he understands that. But whatever animosity there would be towards being cut, and there is some animosity, you know, there is always a little bit of hurt feelings or whatever. I think you get over that and go, okay, I get it. The market has spoken. This is what it is. But again, I still think this guy's been in the league for, what, 9 years, has never sniffed the playoffs? So for him, and the odds of the Broncos being a playoff team in the division that we play in is slim. So I think for him it's about signing with a team that gives him the best opportunity to experience a playoff run and a potential Super Bowl.
But it was smart to move on from him because the money that they would have paid him this year,
it's
just not reflective
of the market
anymore.
No, so absolutely not.
It was a good move. Some more stuff at DenverSports.com that caught my eye. Andrew Mason, in this case, not writing a Mark Schlereth hit piece, wrote about...
Took a day off, huh? Took a day off from back, smearing me?
He'll be back with a vengeance tomorrow.
We need the Mark Schlereth smear campaign by Andrew Mason.
That's
Where is
true.
It?
Where is it?
Yeah, there it is.
Take this opportunity, take the layup. Russell Wilson's smear campaign rolls on. We're now into
still not good.
What is this, our third week? I think it's our third full week of the Russell
We're
Wilson.
We're due, though, but we are due, by the way, for a workout video, aren't we? Maybe running backwards on a treadmill or something.
He's been quiet. I think he'll wait. Knowing his impeccable timing, he'll do it literally. He'll release one on day one of the NFL draft.
That is such a good call. That is such a good call.
Yeah, and what will the theme be? Like, will he be throwing?
No. I think
doing
no.
bicep curls or no. tricep pushdowns?
No. He's going to put together, his people are going to put together a package going from his NC State to Wisconsin days to draft night. All that stuff.
I think, you know,
that's
just
a really good call.
Just thinking about these guys and the journey that they're about ready to jump on, and I remember it, and oh, I feel so happy for
them. And then his new slogan at the very end of it.
Right.
Yeah. Let's smelt. I think, you know what I'd love to see? Maybe we could do a parody Russell Wilson video. It'd be like Prestige Worldwide from Step Brothers. We put whiteout on a bee. It died. But no, him like in the film room. Can't you just see him in the film room? Like, oh, it's a cover two. It's quarters. You know, and I could see that as well.
Going against the narrative that he doesn't see things well out there, doesn't process. Well, that's what Mace is writing about. Mace has been on the whole evaluation trail here for the last couple of months. He and Cecil Lammy, who've done a great job.
Seen a lot of quarterbacks without their shirt on.
We love both of them because they have grinded the last couple of months from the Shrine Game to the Senior Bowl to the Combine to the owners' meetings. So they've been there. But Mace is writing about how what has come clear to him is that Sean Payton, if you had to boil down to one word what Sean Payton's looking for in these quarterbacks, in Mace's opinion, it's processor. How quickly can these quarterbacks process?
Sure.
And can they be an extension of Sean Payton out on the field? So again, I come back to all the film study you've done. If that is what Sean Payton wants, Sean's not consumed with a cannon of an arm.
Okay.
He has said that he does believe a quarterback today needs to have some mobility. But if processing is what it's all about for Sean Payton, who are the quarterbacks in this quarterback or quarterbacks in this draft that you think are Sean Payton guys?
Yeah, I would say
that's the $85 million dead cap question.
I would tell you that Bo Nix probably is the guy with watching all these guys on film makes the quickest, like right now. There, throw it. There's never any hesitation or hold of the football. If it's there, it's out. And it's out quick. And so I would probably say just from that aspect of processing, Bo Nix would probably be the guy on tape that I looked at, and I looked at all the guys, that seems to me to get the ball out of his hand the quickest. If the read is there, it's gone. It is out. So that's probably, as a processor, just on tape. Now, can you talk the language? Can you do all those things? I don't know. I'm not in those meetings, but that's probably the guy that looks the part as the quickest processor.
Some other news to pass along to you on this busy Thursday. Congratulations to Chauncey Billups. Reports coming out yesterday, he is going to be officially announced this weekend at the men's Final Four that he's going into the Basketball Hall of Fame, class of 2024.
The College Basketball Hall?
No. The Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, which takes both college players but it's for his NBA career.
That is awesome.
How about that?
That's awesome.
What a basketball journey. George Washington High School, 3-time Colorado Mr. Basketball, 4-time All-State first team, goes to CU, leads CU to its first NCAA tournament berth in nearly 30 years, back in the 96-97 season, goes pro, taken with the number 3 overall pick by the Celtics in the 97 draft, does not make it there. In fact, Rick Pitino has come out and said that one of his biggest regrets in his coaching career, and it's seen a lot of different stops, was when he was in charge of the Celtics and he gave up on Chauncey too early. Won a championship with the Pistons, named the 2004 NBA Finals MVP, and then came back here full circle with the Nuggets in 2008, and helped lead the Nuggets to the 2009 Western Conference Finals. Finished sixth in the NBA MVP voting that year. And if you are a Nuggets fan and you remember that year, you will agree with what I said. He changed the culture of the Nuggets overnight. They went from being a soft, finesse team to affectionately being nicknamed the Thuggets.
Mm-hmm.
They beat people up. They played defense. They had a toughness to them. And that all started the moment that Chauncey Billups showed up.
Big shot, right? Big shot, Chauncey Billups?
Yep.
Chauncey's a great dude, by the way. Great dude.
Now coaching for the Portland Trailblazers.
Hall of Famer,
so Chauncey Billups.
Did they just announce?
It got leaked yesterday, but it'll become official this weekend.
Dude, I'm happy for Chauncey. That's great. That is awesome. Good for him.
Also, speaking of Nuggets-related stuff, Nikola Jokic is trending towards being not only the MVP, but one of the few unanimous MVPs. New data from the data freaks. The data freaks. Not how you do football. New data from ESPN's third and final MVP straw poll released yesterday says that Jokic is the soon-to-be clear-cut winner of the MVP, and there's a chance that he'll become just the second player to win the award unanimously. As we mentioned earlier this week, Steph Curry, the only other player to do it unanimously.
Stephen A. doesn't have a vote, does he?
I hope not, because he'll do his best.
Could you imagine if there was one guy that didn't vote in a unanimous vote and one dude doesn't vote and it's Stephen A?
Well,
no, Stephen A will come around.
Come around.
He will.
He's got to give up on SGA now that SGA didn't play in back-to-back games in Philadelphia and Boston. Come on. If you're going to
sway the vote.
Exactly. And you're from Oklahoma City. You've got to go back east and you got to shine, yeah. Right? And instead, you don't even play against Philly and Boston? Done. You're out. See ya. According to this straw poll, Jokic is getting 85 of the first place votes. SGA is getting 10.
Of the first place votes?
I know.
Dude.
One for Luka, two for Giannis, two for Tatum. How can you put Tatum last seen on a milk carton in Denver?
Uh-huh.
He'll be the subject of the next True Detective series, What Happened to Jason Tatum? How in the world he could still get two first place votes is ridiculous. Honestly, if I told you you have to vote for somebody else other than Jokic as your MVP, who would you pick?
Other than Jokic, probably Luka.
Yes. All right. We didn't even talk about that. I would have too.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you really take a good look at Dallas,
mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they got Kyrie Irving, but Kyrie's not the same player that he once was. And then beyond that, they got nothing. Oklahoma City's got a better supporting cast around SGA than Dallas does around Luka. So I'd probably go with Luka too.
Yeah.
But he's going to win the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Three-time, soon-to-be three-time MVP winner, Nikola Jokic.
That's awesome. Should be unanimous. It should be. There's nobody that you should be able to vote for other than Jokic.
I don't know how, if you claim to be a basketball insider, expert, enough that you are given an MVP vote. I don't know how, in good conscience, you could pick anybody else but Jokic. The numbers, the eye test,
right?
The defending champions, one of the best teams again in the league this year, playing at a ridiculous level. How?
I don't know. I mean, you can't. And the only way you can is if you're purposely trying to throw shade. And if that's the way you operate in your picks, then you should not have a pick.
I see where you're going. Yeah, you're right. that you just want to be that contrarian.
Yeah.
That sports outlets call you up and go, wow,
mm-hmm.
you were the one guy that didn't vote for Jokic. Why?
Yeah.
And then you make a little name for yourself.
Right.
Have your 15 minutes of fame. You ready for this?
Uh-huh.
So tomorrow's opening day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not completely sold out yet.
Really?
But as Jake Shapiro writes at DenverSports.com, on the Rockies' official ticketing site, there appear to be at least 100 seats left unsold. But check out the price. The cheapest seat for the festivities in some subpar baseball, as Jake writes, is $80 pre-fee, and that will get you an upper deck seat. But you can still sit behind the dugout for $255 per seat.
So
these are same seats that dropped to like $23 and $85 respectively when Tampa comes into town over the weekend. Just jacking up the prices for opening day.
So you said there's still only 100 seats left?
On their website. Now, you know, out on the secondary market, there's still some unsold tickets as well.
Okay.
Is this the year, Mark? Is this the year that Rockies fans finally say enough's enough and actually we see a drop-off in attendance to the point where they draw less than 3 million people?
No.
No?
Dude, it's Colorado. It's summertime. It's beautiful out.
Good opponents come in.
Good opponents.
Fireworks nights.
Yes, fireworks.
Fireworks. Nights. They are brilliant with the fireworks. God, they're good with the fireworks nights.
That stink of good green chili served on hot dogs. I mean, how are you going to go wrong with that?
Really? You're selling?
Huh?
You guys.
Oh, yeah, we've been in.
You're in the ballpark still?
Oh, yeah, we've been in the ballpark for years.
I'm surprised that relationship still is there.
I'm great with the food people.
You're great, what do you mean? You're great with the food people.
I love the Rockies. I mean, you know, do we give them a little bit of grief?
A little bit of grief?
Yeah.
We give them all the grief they deserve.
Well.
And then some.
We probably don't give them all the grief they deserve. We probably, because we both love baseball.
True.
So we probably don't give them all the grief. Now, have we been harsh on Iron Man? KB, as you like to call him. Sure. Does he deserve it? Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
On the text line. Tomorrow's not opening day, guys. That was last week. Actually, I'm going to argue with you, Texter. I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I do not believe a baseball season officially starts until you play your home opener. And I believe opening day.
We can wipe the record clean if they're 0-0.
No.
Unfortunately, and that's no cap.
Unfortunately, we can't do that, but no. But I your home opener deserves its own opening day designation. Even if you played 6, 7, 8 games.
I totally agree. Opening day, you have two opening day ceremonies, the one you have on the road and the one at your home. They'll still introduce both teams. They'll do all the pomp and circumstance will be there because it's opening day in your stadium. So there are two opening days.
Yes.
Absolutely. Every team has two opening days.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's glorious.
And it's just something about baseball. Because you're right, the Nuggets could open up or the Avalanche could open up with 3 games on the road, then come home for their first game at home, and it doesn't have the same kind of feeling of the home opener that it does in baseball. It's a baseball thing. It just is.
What about football when you get your first home game?
Same thing. It's just not the same.
Not as baseball. You're right.
From Justin, Chauncey made the Nuggets better. I thought that was all Melo wearing number 15. Chauncey's impact on the Nuggets further proves how soft Melo is and why he's nothing more than a whiner.
Hey, no cap.
I will not disagree with that.
That's no cap.
I will not disagree with that. What allowed that year to be so good was that Melo went from having to be the front man to being part of the supporting cast.
Right. to falling in line.
And he did.
Mr. Big Shot.
Yes, he did. Nope. Justin, you're right. You are absolutely right.
Mm.
Coming up, a lot to react to. We'll let you get in on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. We're still looking for me and Mark's old-timey 1900s, late 1800s baseball nicknames. What would they be?
There's some good ones.
We'll get to some of those and more coming up next.
With an advanced network, cybersecurity solutions, and trusted partnership, Comcast Business powers more businesses than anyone. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Get started with internet and security for your small business for $49.99 a month for 12 months with a 2-year contract. Plus, ask how to get up to an $800 prepaid card with qualifying internet. Call today. Ends 5/5/24. Restrictions apply. New customers only with 50 megabits per second internet and security edge. Eco bill and auto pay required. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
So apparently, Johnny Fever and Rogue, Sid the Kid, Sidney Corr, they've gone through all the recommendations for our old-time baseball names, and we'll get to some of them.
Oh, there's a lot of them, too.
Coming up here in just a little bit. They've been monitoring the RamosLaw.com text line, and they've come up with their four top choices for both.
Right. I can hear them whispering back there, too.
I know, I can, too.
The two of them.
I got to read this text. This is awesome.
All right.
You guys shouldn't brag about criticizing the Rockies. What you actually don't do is criticize the Donkeys. You guys are bootlickers who are still up Elway's butt so far you can't realize how bad your football team is. What?
Yeah, you certainly have not listened to this program.
Clearly have not listened the last 8 years.
Dude, I got excommunicated from the Broncos. Come on. That's just silliness.
I've been so critical of Elway over the years that there was a time where John, I guess, had a line of wine.
Yes.
And
I think he still does.
So he sent bottles of his wine over here to all the different hosts.
Yeah. You didn't get one?
I didn't get one. No. Me and one other guy.
Yeah.
Well, you can guess who that is. We're the only two out of everybody who did not get a bottle of wine. So clearly, some of those jabs hit their mark.
Sure. I mean, we've all been in trouble a time or two. So Texture clearly has not listened to this program. And as of right now, because we agree with what Sean did in regards to the quarterback situation with Russ and moving on and ripping it down and moving on from guys like Judy and moving on from different players, as hard as that is at times, we agreed that this thing needed to be stripped down and rebuilt. And so, you know, we're on that path. But listen, if this thing falls apart and is garbage over the next several years, dude, the kid gloves will be off. We've always been honest on this show in regards to the Broncos.
Guy, Stephen A. Smith has already been on record as recently as yesterday saying that he's got an MVP vote and his vote's going to be for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Well, if he wants to do that, then if he wants to run the risk of losing credibility,
that's ignorant.
Go right ahead. Because if it's...
Talk about D-bag.
If it's almost unanimous and he's the lone holdout, he's going to look stupid.
Yeah.
He just will.
Especially after you have to be willing to line up against the best. And you had a couple of Eastern Conference teams that are playoff teams. Now, I don't know, is he officially injured? Does he have it listed as an injury? Is it a day-to-day
thing? Yeah, it's an injury, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody also said, guys, come on. Say what needs to be said. It's racially motivated, plain and simple. Admit it. You're close, but here's where you're wrong. It's not racially motivated. I do think that there is a strong sentiment of, among voters out there that they don't like voting for a euro.
Yeah.
I think that is legit. But if you think that the idea of the great white hope has gone away, you haven't been paying attention to women's college basketball. You don't think the Caitlin Clark popularity is influenced
Let me ask you this.
You think if Larry Bird came along today, that Larry Bird wouldn't be getting a ton of run? Heck, the kid, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the kid at Indiana State.
Let me ask you this,
he's become an interest.
Are people more apt to vote for Giannis as a euro, or even Wembanyama as he grows into this, than Jokic or than a guy like Luka? So I don't feel like there's the same bias against Luka that I feel like there is against Jokic.
Really? You might be right about that. Again, is it the highlight worthiness that Jokic just isn't a highlight worthy enough?
Right. Even when he dunks, it's not like it's like, oh, he just barely got it over the rim feel to it. You know, I know that's not the truth, but that's the case.
Like, you talk about highlights. I see a million NBA highlights, and it's like, okay, hey, that's a great dunk. Right. Look at that long three. I'm telling you, the pass he made the other day when he was out of bounds and he threw a baseball or a baseball football pass to the opposite corner for an open three. Nobody does that.
He threw one a couple of week ago or so behind his back, just like over his shoulders, behind his back, two-handed pass to Gordon for a dunk. And it's like, how does he even know he's there?
I know.
It's stuff like that that blows me away.
Let's get to some of our baseball nicknames. Again, this comes from the story that, unfortunately, for poor Kyle Freeland, through the first two starts, he's given up 17 earned runs, the most in the first two starts of a season by a left-hander in 111 years since Coldwater Jim Huey.
Yes.
And so that got us thinking about what would be our baseball late 1800s, early 1900s nicknames. And the textures always respond to a challenge. So you guys back there, Rogue and Fever, what are your top recommendations?
Okay, so we have five for each. I guess we'll just do two for each of you, then we'll save the top three for later.
Sound okay, good?
All right.
All right, so for Mike, we have Mike the Khaki Cowboy Evans as number five.
Khaki Cowboy.
Khaki Cowboy. Okay, I like it.
Number four, Mike the Wedge Evans.
How would that sound in Mike?
Here comes the wedge. Mike Evans.
Okay, what else?
For Stink, we have Mark Lawnmower Schlereth. Eh. Nice and simple.
All right.
And then for four, just surprisingly underwhelming.
Surprisingly underwhelming. All right. I think we got some others that are coming. That might be a little bit.
I think those are okay. I'm looking for more.
I saw one that I hope is on the list for you.
I did too.
Because I saw one that was like, oh, that's perfect because it actually fits with an actual old-time nickname.
Yeah.
That's one of the great nicknames in baseball history.
Are we thinking about the same?
I don't think so, but okay. I saw it and I was like, ooh, I like where that person's going. So we'll get to some more of those. And we'll also hear from Greg Cosell, who a long time, over 40 years, the lead producer at NFL Films with the 33rd team. This is a guy who is one of the most respected evaluators of football, college or pro, and we had him on to get his thoughts on the quarterback prospects. You'll hear that next.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
All the draft nicks out there, all the draft evaluators, they're all over the place now. But arguably, one of the OGs is Greg Cosell, who has been with NFL Films for over 40 years. I mean, you talk about a guy who goes over. Even Mark Schlereth looks at Greg Cosell and goes, wow, that guy looks at a lot of film. And he's been doing it for decades for NFL Films and now the 33rd team. And we had him on and asked him, how does he go about evaluating these college quarterbacks?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that they're all prospects. You know, I think sometimes we forget and we talk about these guys as if they're finished products, and this is exactly what they are, and they're either great or they're not. And I think, you know, you need to understand that it's a process. I think you have to start with what you feel to be their traits and their attributes and their characteristics as a player. And then you think in terms of how that can transition and project to the league. And then you have to think in terms of what kind of system would best fit how they play, because there are very few transcendent players. So much is dependent on coaching, system, how they're deployed, what they're asked to do. Are there certain non-negotiables? I mean, if a guy does not have very good ball location and he misses too many routine easy throws, that's not likely to change, and that would be a problem. If you feel watching tape, based on whatever offense he's running in college, that he's just not seeing things particularly well, because route concepts are route concepts. There's not 1,000 of them. So even in college, you see similar route concepts as you see in the league. If you feel that he's just not seeing things as quickly as he needs to, or as clearly as he needs to, based on the route concept versus a coverage, that's a hard thing to fix. If you feel like a quarterback, when he's under some kind of duress, flinches or breaks down too soon, that can often be a hard thing to fix. You have to try to find the balance between guys leaving the pocket and making plays versus staying in the pocket and allowing the offense to work. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but I think you get the idea that there's, and Stink knows this, that there's so many factors, which is why it's not an easy thing. And when all's said and done, no matter what the metrics are, no matter what the analytics say, it's still human beings evaluating human beings.
Greg Cosell from the NFL Films and also from the 33rd team, join us.
So from your perspective, and you've studied all these guys in-depthly, who's the guy that you look at that you think transitions the best to the next level?
I think that's a hard question to answer, because now you have to think about you know, how a guy could be used. Like, for instance, let's look at someone like Bo Nix, okay? Bo Nix is certainly not being talked about as among the top five. But when you watch Bo Nix's tape, and you can decide whatever you want about the Oregon offense, people might say, well, that's a college offense, whatever that means these days. But he played with a really high level of efficiency. He was a ball distributor. He was an executor of a pretty well-schemed college offense. He knew where to go with the football. He played with a relatively refined sense of timing and rhythm. He does not have a big arm. You know, he doesn't have a power arm, but he does have movement ability. So when you look at Bo Nix and then you look at Drake May, you'll immediately look at Drake May and say, well, Drake May 6'4", 225, which, by the way, is a trait. He's got a much bigger arm. He's probably a better athlete overall. He can make some throws that Nix can't make, but overall, the way he executed his offense in terms of efficiency, ball distribution, was not as consistently high level as Nix. So now you have to decide, what do you like better? You know, do you feel because May has quote-unquote better traits, depending on what your definition of traits are, that May's a better prospect, or is Nix a better prospect? You know, now you're getting into that, how coaches see things and how they see quarterbacks within the context of their system.
Visitor Greg Cosell. So, Greg, knowing what you know of Sean Payton, which one of these prospects, your word, I love it, which one of your prospects do you think best fit who and what Sean Payton is and wants?
Well, you guys are obviously around Sean more than I am these days, and I've talked to Sean over the years, but I'm not going to say I know exactly what's in his head. It would seem to me, and certainly with what happened with Russell Wilson, who's not a naturally timing, refined passer, that what Sean likes and what his experience has been at a high level with Drew Brees is he would like a quarterback that plays with a refined sense of timing and rhythm, that hits the back foot, knows where to go with the ball, and has precise ball location. It would seem to me that that's what he'd want. Now, again, if you're looking at that, you know, I mentioned Bo Nix for a reason. I don't know what he thinks of Bo Nix, but Bo Nix played that way in college. You know, I think that Michael Penix played that way in college. I mean, that's my sense. And again, I'm not breaking news here. I don't want people to think, well, Cosell says that Payton should take Nix or Penix. I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, having seen Sean Payton all through the years when he had Drew Brees, who's obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer, and you don't want to compare guys to first ballot Hall of Famers, but he played a certain way, and I think Sean wants his quarterback to play that way.
If we get to 12 and they decide not to take a quarterback, which, you know, I mean, they've got so many different needs they yep. have to fill. So they decide, hey, all these quarterbacks got, you know, taken early. There's a lot of good football players that could fall to us. Who are some of the guys that you're looking at just from a football perspective that you say, this dude is a player?
Well, I think, as you know, Stink, it's good. It's a big offensive tackle draft. And again, you would know more about offensive line than I do, and I'm not going to presume that I'm an offensive line guru. I've been doing it for a lot of years. I talk to O-line coaches. Sometimes they tell me I know more than I think I do, but I wouldn't fancy myself as a guy who's, you know, an offensive line guru. But there's a ton of offensive tackles in this draft. They're all a little bit different. You know, you just have to figure out, and then you would be able to answer this better than I. When I watch offensive linemen, I always think to myself, what's coachable and what's not coachable? And, you know, sometimes I don't come up with a great answer for that. You know, sometimes I think, you know, if Bill Callahan was coaching, he could say, I could fix that in 2 weeks. Or he might say, that's not fixable. I don't know, you know, I don't always know the answer to that. But there's a lot of really good offensive tackle prospects in this draft class. I think it's a really deep receiver class. I'm not sure there'd be a receiver probably after the top three that I might take at 12, but it's a really deep receiver class. There are some edge players I really like. The kid I love, but I know he might even be off a team's board because of his medical, is Latu. I love Latu from UCLA, but my guess is there'll be 15 teams, and I don't know how the Broncos feel, there'll be 15 teams that don't even have him on their board because of his medicals.
Greg Cosell from NFL Films and from the 33rd team. Good website, by the way, involving a bunch of, former GMs,
yeah,
coaches, yeah, coordinators, NFL people, the 33rd team. Great, great place to go visit and get just a treasure trove of football stuff. But
I love getting on the weekly Zooms.
They have you on?
Oh yeah, I haven't gone on as much as I used to, but yeah, I'll get on and just sometimes just listen, and mm-hmm, they'll have certain breakdown things, and then, you know, kind of question and answers and stuff. But it might be like Mike Martz presenting a concept, right?
Right.
And how he liked to coach it and teach it, and it might be, you know, a defensive coordinator or something like that, presenting kind of a defensive structure and leverage and you know, just football junkie stuff. It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. It seems so obvious, right? Like, if I was doing a mock draft and I didn't live in Denver and I was tasked with putting together a mock draft, it'd be so easy to take Bo Nix at 12 for the Broncos.
Sure.
It seems like the obvious pick. But is it almost too obvious?
It tends to feel that way,
right?
A little bit, right? I mean, they talked to him, right? They met with him. The information of them meeting with him for 5 hours was floated out there. I feel like you only float that out there if you're not really interested in him, to make people think you're really interested in him. Does that make sense?
Sure. This is the, if their lips are moving, they're lying stage of the draft.
again, I just keep feeling like one, they don't have the capital and don't want to move up. There's nobody that's impressive enough to them, that doesn't have enough red flags to them to say, we got to get up to four. And they don't have the capital to go up there anyhow. And then I think there are so many other things that they need, and there's so many good players are going to drop to them that I think they're going to take a football player. That's just my gut reaction.
Well, we are, 3 weeks away? 3 weeks today.
Really?
3 weeks today, April 25th. 3 weeks today away from the first round of the NFL draft. Can't wait. Mm. Up next, speaking of can't wait, if you're an Avalanche fan and a Nugget fan, are you at the point now where enough of the regular season, time to get on with the playoffs, or do you still see value as a fan in these final few regular season games? That's next.